AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. More fallout after the release of that video showing the police beating death of Tyre Nichols. CBS's Skylar Henry has the latest.
Five officers involved who were fired are facing multiple charges, including second-degree murder. Memphis police confirmed Monday that a sixth officer, Preston Hemphill, has been relieved of duty since the beginning of the investigation for his role in the incident. Several others who arrived on the scene are also under investigation.
He's dead, handcuffs, moaning on the ground, and everybody's walking around nonchalantly like it's business as usual. So it should be accountability for everybody on the video.
That's Nichols family attorney Ben Crump. Meanwhile, three Memphis Fire Department officials have been fired, and they could face charges in connection with the death of Tyre Nichols. A Chicago prosecutor is dropping sex abuse charges against singer R. Kelly. Speaking to fellow sexual assault victims.
As a survivor, I know that the courage that it took for them to come forward, and I know that for those who were seeking to have their day in court here in Illinois, that today's announcement may be disappointing.
But Kim Fox says R. Kelly will be in prison for decades anyway on federal convictions. A trial is underway in New York for a woman accused of trying to kill a friend by giving her cheesecake laced with poison.
Victoria Nasora is accused of coming up with the intricate scheme.
This woman concocted a calculated plan.
Prosecutor Constantinos Liturgas, in his opening statement, told jurors the poison cheesecake was a key element.
To get her alone in a room, to try to kill her, and to take her identity.
Nasora's friend did eat the cheesecake, then passed out. She survived, but when she came to, realized her passport and other items were missing. Nasora is also suspected of drugging men that she met on a dating website, then stealing their money. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Winter storm watches and warnings stretch from Texas to Pennsylvania. WCBS radio meteorologist Craig Allen.
Inland portions of Texas, as well as on up across the Mississippi Valley and on up towards the Great Lakes. This is an area where there is precipitation, where there is moisture, and it is falling in the form of snow, sleet, and freezing rain.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Israel, where he's been discussing several issues, including Iran's nuclear ambitions.
We agree that Iran must never be allowed to acquire a nuclear weapon.
Secretary Blinken also urged Israel and the Palestinians to do everything possible to calm recent tensions. Former British Prime Minister Boris Johnson discussing a phone call with Russian President Vladimir Putin before the invasion of Ukraine.
He threatened me at one point and said, you know, Boris, I don't want to hurt you, but with a missile, it would only take a minute or something like that, you know.
Boris Johnson made his comments during an interview with the BBC. This is CBS News.
The Shah 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24-7 at waukradio.com.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Jane Van Nair. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin has seen an alarming increase in the number of suicides, jumping 32% from 2000 to 2020. The Green Bay Press-Gazette reporting that suicide is now Wisconsin's 10th leading cause of death. In the last 3 years, suicide rates were higher among rural residents than urban residents, and overwhelmingly, the suicides were among men. The federal COVID-19 emergency declarations are set to end in May. That means control over things like testing and vaccines will be handed over to the pharmaceutical companies instead of the federal government. And while it only costs around $3 to make, Moderna plans to hike the price of a COVID-19 vaccine 400% to $130 per shot. That cost will soon fall on the consumer or insurance companies. I'm Jane Matmayer for Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
Wait a minute. How about this? Listen to me, you lantern-jawed cretin, you horned-eyed homunculus. You are going to do what's right for the people of Wisconsin. You're putting cancer water in our water, destroying the greatest university system in the country and public education. Knock it off. That is unlikely to be said. That's what I'd say.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM. Native Roots Radio is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Call or place a takeout order at cafelatte.com.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, any cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And I'm your host, Robert Pilot, and we discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say this portion of the show was brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Hey, I'm just not following the script as usual, but Ogama, welcome, and welcome everyone out there, all our allies and all our Native relatives, everybody in on Turtle Island and in Four Directions. We do a program here. It's about Native Americans and our allies, and we talk in the beginning here. We talk about news and events that you don't hear anywhere else, so why don't we get to Ogama right away here with the Native news.
Hey, bonjour, Anine, everybody. It's Ogama Ginuikwe, and I have some news and events for things that are coming up for you here locally and also kind of, I guess, a little bit nationally, too. First event that is coming up is a Rise Up for Peltier in Minneapolis on February 6th at noon. That's at the Federal Courthouse in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The rally is for justice and freedom, and 48 years is too long. Leonard Peltier is currently in a federal high-security prison in Florida for aiding and abetting the murder of a FBI officer during the shoot-off that followed the occupation of Wounded Knee. And that is a charge that would not normally receive that level of punishment or a prison time, right, Robert? 48 years for aiding and abetting.
Right. We talk about that all the time, that, you know, these murderers that murdered George Floyd in Minneapolis here, the police that's watched and were convicted of aiding and abetting are getting a year and a half.
Exactly. So it's something to keep in mind when you're, you know, having those discussions about Leonard Peltier and, you know, within your inner circles and those kinds of things that, he's been in prison for 48 years for the crime of aiding and abetting. Events are also planned worldwide and nationally, everywhere from Rapid City, South Dakota, and Minneapolis, Fargo, New Mexico, California, Italy, Frankfurt, Germany, Rome, Paris, France, and Geneva, Switzerland, to name a few. You can check out the International Day of Solidarity, Rise Up for Peltier, online. Make sure you check social media and rise up together to demand justice for the indigenous political prisoner, Leonard Peltier. I do believe we're going to have somebody coming on a little bit later in the show just to touch base a little bit more on that event as well. Coming up here in February in the Twin Cities and in Duluth are going to be Missing and Murdered Women and Relatives marches for 2023. This year will be the first year the march is back in person in Minneapolis. Event starts at 11 a.m. and goes until 2 p.m. It's put on by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition, which has been a wonderful sponsor of us here on Native Roots Radio. The speakers begin at 11 a.m. and the march begins at noon. They are leaving from East Phillips Park in Minneapolis. Everyone is welcome. There's going to be speakers, lunch, an informational table, and more. Up in Duluth, they're going to have the annual Memorial March for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Relatives. And that is, of course, put on by the American Indian Community Housing Organization, as well as many others. And their event up there starts at 11 a.m. and runs until 5 p.m. The march there starts at 2:45 p.m. They're going to have red shawls, and round dance, jingle dress. As always, wear red, hang a red dress or a red shirt or a red outfit, something outside your door to remember our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives and to help them know that we are still looking for them. Red is the chosen color of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives movement because it is said that spirits can see the color red from wherever they are. So call on those spirits and people all around you to take action against the ongoing epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women, relatives, Two-Spirit, and LGBTQ plus relatives. It's an ongoing problem nationwide here in the United States and Canada, as well as other parts of Turtle Island and beyond. So definitely something we want to uplift there. Another event that is coming up in February, man, February is going to be a busy month. The day after Red Dress Day on February 14th, there's going to be a Rise and Repair rally for Indigenous rights and climate justice at the Minnesota State Capitol in St. Paul, Minnesota. Members of the Indigenous faith and climate and community groups are going to gather at the Minnesota State Capitol to demand that legislators honor Indigenous sovereignty and treaty rights and that they take a green path forward. They're calling on the legislators and the government to build a just and sustainable economy for people all across Minnesota and to take bold action to protect our land, water, and all living creatures. Again, that's Wednesday, February 15th from 1 to 6 p.m. at the Minnesota State Capitol. You can go to riseandrepair.org and, you know, make sure you RSVP. As always, it's a free event, but we people always like to have, you know, a count of who's going to be there. And it also, if, you know, you're a member of the press or you're affiliated with a particular organization that would be coming, you can figure out how to, you know, show up in your best self. So us as press, we always like to let them know we're going to be showing up as press. But other options when you go to register, including learning how to lobby, visiting with my legislator, just attending the rally, or volunteering for the event. Events like this always need security. They always need people to help with logistics. And if you're looking for a way to help the planet and the movement, that is a good way to do it. We talk a lot here about environmental issues and, you know, needing to have meaningful consultation with tribes when it comes in regards to, you know, the environment. But, you know, meaningful consultation with tribes and how legislation that's passed affects tribes is not just limited to the environment. And the South Dakota Searchlight just put out this article. In South Dakota, there's going to be a food sales tax cut, and that passed in the House on Thursday. And nine of tribal governments in South Dakota are going to be are concerned about this. The Bureau of Finance and Management of South Dakota estimated that the tribes are going to lose about $2 million in funding for tribal government operations if the food tax is eliminated, because a 4.5% tax on food brings in $102 million to the state local government. But there is an agreement in order saying that the food sales tax, part of the food sales tax that's collected on the reservations, goes back to its original reservation. And the tribal governments in South Dakota are kind of raising the alarm on this. Meanwhile, the House Taxation Committee commented on Thursday that the question of how the food tax cut would impact tribal budgets had not been explored. So they just didn't think about whether or not the tribes were going to be adversely affected. And they're saying now that there's probably workable solutions and there's some ways that they could address these concerns, et cetera, and so forth. But that is, you know, a big thing that they just went ahead and passed this without any sort of, you know, agreement with the tribes, Robert. And I think that happens with legislation a lot more than our non-native allies really, really realize.
Yeah, I agree. That's good that we bring this up here. Good words. And it's crazy. It really is.
Yeah, so the other example that's given in this article says the Rosebud Sioux tribe gets back 93% of retail sales and service tax revenue, and food sales account for 25 to 30% of that figure, which means they're going to be going from about 93% down to about 73% in their budget, which is a big hit.
Yes, it is. Hey, Pini Gigi Ogama for the news. We got Rachel Thunder stopping in, and then Rita Arndt. We can't wait to see her. I know she's all set up with her husband's gaming site, so she'll sound really good. Hey, we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us. Ho-wa.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Metro State University empowers students to expand their knowledge and advance their careers through high-quality bachelor's and master's programs in high-demand fields. Looking to complete a four-year degree? Metro State has more than 60 undergraduate programs to choose from. Hoping to move into the next level of your career? Find out which of Metro State's 25-plus graduate programs is right for you. Visit metrostate.edu for upcoming info sessions and to apply. Spring registration is open now. Metro State University, where learning meets living.
Take care of your community by joining Metro Transit's Adopt a Stop program. Show your community pride by adopting a transit stop. Join us in helping keep the stop and your neighborhood beautiful and report any maintenance needs to us. We'll put a sign at the stop recognizing your efforts. Plus, you'll get 10 free rides every month. Get details at metrotransit.org/adopt. Again, adopt a stop for Metro Transit.
Hey, Cudigee to all my friends and relatives in four directions. This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm here to ask you for your support. Finding honest, Native-centered news is not easy. But with your support, we're able to provide accurate information about Standing Rock, Line 3, treaty violations, and COVID-19 in our Native communities. Please visit Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon and donate if you can. That's Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Pini Gigi, and thank you for your support. Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, this portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, thanks, Ogama. Hey, we have Rachel Thunder here stopping in real quick before we get to Rita, and we wanted to get an update for the Leonard Peltier, update for Leonard Peltier, and it's good to see you, Rachel. It seems like years since I've seen you. Ho-wah.
I know what you mean, Robert. Tansay, hello, everybody, and Gananaskamolten, thank you for having me on. I'm just going to update really briefly on some of the efforts happening around the world right now for the clemency of Elder Leonard Peltier. So on February the 6th, 2023, which is this coming Monday, is 48 years since the original arrest of Leonard Peltier and him being held by the colonial governments of the Canadian government and the United States government. So the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee put a worldwide call out in solidarity for people to plan events, protests, rallies, prayer vigils in their local communities. And so here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, we're going to be having a rally at 12 noon on February the 6th. Here in Minneapolis at the federal courthouse, there is a Facebook link for the event. There's flyers rolling around. I know Robert has some of the flyers. These are events that are happening all around the world. There's six planned in Germany alone, many in Europe, and then many across Turtle Island. So I know that there's plans in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Chicago, Minneapolis, Fargo, Tampa, Florida, Tulsa, Sacramento, just to name a few. So if you're listening, you know, make sure to get involved and just show up in solidarity and support for clemency for Elder Peltier.
Well, thanks, Rachel, for the update. We want to talk to you in a couple more days and talk more about this. But thank you so much for stopping in. And I know you're a busy person, so really, really appreciate you and stopping in.
Yeah. Thank you, Robert. Thanks for having me on.
Right on. All right. Hey, so we're here we go. We just got a great show here. We have Rita Arndt, who's with White Earth. She's a White Earth resident.
I have my White Earth.
And it's pink. You have your pink White Earth shirt. Okay. And so you're with the Minnesota Historical Society, and you're with the head of a Native American Initiatives. And we want to just check in and see what's going on, because there is so many cool things happening with the Minnesota Historical Society. So welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here again and to talk about some of the programs that the Native American Initiatives Department is doing at the Minnesota Historical Society. So I just wanted to give a brief update on some of them, and I'm hoping that in the future we'll be able to dive deeper into some of these programs, especially when more of due dates are due or when program dates are happening, so that we can share with the audience about when and where to support these programs.
Excellent. So you sound great too, by the way. Thank your husband for being a gamer.
I know. He's like, I have to go. I can't game right now because my wife has a thing. I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you for him for that. So one of the programs I wanted to talk about is a Native American Undergraduate Museum Fellows Program. Now, it is a mouthful, so we normally call it NAMF, but the program has been around at the Historical Society in some kind of format for over a decade. And the goal of the program is to expose Native undergraduate students to the museum field, especially for those who might not even think about that field to go into because of many reasons, like, oh, I'm not a historian, or, you know, I don't know much about history, or like a museum, I don't want to work in that kind of place, but really to expose what that looks like. And it's a really great program. We actually just had our first alumni event. We have over 90 alumni. Wow. Who have gone on to do many wonderful things. So it's just really great to get the folks back together for that.
Well, you know, working at the, you know, seeing you in the community, which I have, Rita, and you and your people that you have, like, tabling are a lot of fun. So, I mean, the museum has to be kind of fun, doesn't it? I mean, really.
Yeah, it is, but some people just don't, they don't see it as a space for them. So that's part of this fellowship, is to really be like, you know what, this is a space for Native people to be in. It is a place for a Native people to disrupt too, because far too often museums get information wrong or, you know, it's very dated or stereotypical. So there's a place for our voice and how that can look. It can be fun. It can be just, you know, hanging out at powwows and just sharing our resources and making friends like we have. So it's, yeah. I absolutely love it. I wanted to go into the museum field. So I've always was on this track, but there are people who were like, you know what, there's education opportunities through the museum. You know, there's, you know, we have a marketing team, you know, we do media. There's lots of ways to work in the field. And you don't have to necessarily be like, well, I'm not a history major or, you know, that's not my thing. That's fine. A lot of folks aren't.
Well, I had students work there. I was a high school teacher that worked at the Minnesota Historical Society and did just that. They did video stuff. They learned things. They were I have a former student, and I can't think of his or her name, is still there after all the years of basically kind of interning back then. And I'll have to look into that, find out who that was. But yeah, there is a lot of other things going on there.
Yeah, and part of what we want to do with this program is to, you know, be that connection from community to the museum field so that it's not as scary. It's not as, because there's a lot of unknowns there, and museums have a reputation in Native communities where it comes off in a way that is not welcoming. So it's like we're really trying to, counteract that and change that narrative. So to make it a more welcoming place for, you know, people to work there, but also Native community to come visit and to use us as a resource.
Yeah, I really feel that it is that way. I was there for a gala a couple months ago, and, you know, everyone was really welcoming. I went and got to go see the museum part about Native Americans that were here. And it was really, really cool. And I thought it was a good vibe. I really felt a good vibe. But, you know, I haven't been in there in years. So it was new. And I think it's a new vibe, too.
Yeah, it has changed. That exhibit, Our Home, just celebrated its third anniversary. But we haven't been able to celebrate it that much because COVID happened. And I was one of the main exhibit curators for that exhibit. So I'm very proud of it. And stay tuned, because I will bring it up later, but our show related to it is going to open in October of this year about the photographs. So stay tuned for that. I'll have to come back on to talk more about that.
Well, I'm excited, and we're going to keep you on a little longer than you think, I think. So I'm really excited about the photographs, because in the past too, like on eBay, I've seen photographs and I've bought a few, and you have the Minneapolis papers photographs, which are, it's just amazing that partnership happened, because what happens to all this stuff, you know, and it's great that you guys are swooping in on that.
Yeah, it's wild. I think the big thing is a lot of people don't understand the depth of resources that the Historical Society has, especially for Native communities. And also the spaces where Native stuff comes up is like in unexpected places. But yeah, with the Star Inn Tribune, we have full boxes and boxes of photos that they used in their newspapers, and they just had some labeled Indians. And so we went in and kind of dived deeper and organized them by date. We're looking at themes, thinking about how things were connected. Some stories are very urban, some are very reservation, and like thinking about what these stories actually tell versus what was actually shared in the newspaper that day. So yeah, I'll have to come back to talk more about that project, because it's developing very nicely. And we finally have a date. Well, October, but that's close enough than it was before. So we're very excited.
Well, I'm excited because I did scoop up a couple pictures, and a funny one of them was a familiar last name in Ho-Chunk that was working in some sort of radio, whether it was KFAI or way back in the 60s. So, I mean, just gems like that are all over there. And I was there when you were tabling and people were coming up and telling you who these people were. It was really quite exciting.
Yeah, the response has been great from just sharing the little bit at tabling events. So I look forward to how the response will be for the exhibit.
Yeah, definitely. So we got like a minute left here. Tell our people in Wisconsin, because we have a big following in Wisconsin, where are you located? And that would be good to know.
Yeah, we are located. Our main location is the History Center in St. Paul. It's right big on a hill between the cathedral and the U.S. Capitol. I mean, not the U.S., the Minnesota State Capitol. We're not that far from Wisconsin, so please come visit. And just because we are the Minnesota Historical Society, we have more than that. We have lots of relevant information related to Wisconsin as well. So don't discount that as us just being Minnesota in front of it.
Right. Don't worry. There's no Viking stuff there, so you guys can come to it. But hey, I am here with Rita Arndt, White Earth.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. The FBI is now searching President Biden's home in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware.
This is now the third FBI search linked to a location connected to President Biden.
CBS's Adriana Diaz says it's part of the classified documents investigation. Football legend Tom Brady was up early on Twitter today.
I'm retiring for good.
Retiring for good, he says at age 45. He backpedaled on his announcement last year. CBS Sports NFL writer Tyler Sullivan says he leaves with 3 league MVPs and 7 Super Bowl titles.
You look at what he was able to do over the amount of time he was able to do it, and that is what I think is going to be so hard to match there with Tom Brady.
It's another day of flight cancellations and driving woes in parts of the South hit by snow and ice. 3 deaths are blamed on the weather. Texas transportation official Mike Peters.
Can't eliminate every patch of ice. So the biggest concern we have are folks out there driving too fast.
CBS News Brief.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The race for Wisconsin Supreme Court is getting a lot of attention. State Senator Melissa Agard says voters seem to be more aware of what's at stake.
Whether it's reproductive freedoms, whether it's the maps for our legislative districts, whether it's access to voting, those have been on the front burner for people in our state.
Agard speaking at a WisPolitics luncheon yesterday. The primary election is the 21st. Wisconsin dairy farmers are getting more money for their milk. The U.S. Ag Department says Wisconsin dairy farmers got $23.30 per hundredweight in December of last year. That's $1.80 more than a year before that. In sports, 7-time Super Bowl winner Tom Brady says he's retiring for good this time. The Bucks beat Charlotte last night and Marquette hosts Villanova tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a 6-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to The Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Cafe Latte is a leader in sustainable dining, composting their food and paper waste along with recycling everything they can. Located off Victoria and Grand in St. Paul or cafelatte.com.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, everybody. This portion of the show is brought to you by Native Roots Radio Network. I want to remind everybody that Native Roots Radio does have a Patreon. And we would love it if you have anything to spare, if you could jump on over to patreon.com/Native Roots Radio Network. And if you have anything to spare, jump on and be a patron of ours. I want to thank some of our newest patrons, Kyla and Allison, as well as some of our longstanding patrons, Matt McNeil from AM 950, Nicholas Shaw, Andy Pearson, and Ruth Buffalo. So, McWitch, thank you all for your continued patronage for us.
Yes, good point, Pinigigi. And thank you so much, everybody that supported us during COVID. It was a huge deal, and keep on, you've kept on supporting us. So it's great to have you on. Hey, we're here with Rita Arndt, and she's with the Minnesota Historical Society, and she works under the Native American Initiative. And it's just fun kind of talking about this. We were talking a little bit about pictures. How did that, do you remember how that worked out? Did the Minneapolis paper come to you and say, hey, we have these pictures, and we're going to get rid of them, or we're going to try and sell them? How did that work out? How did you get that collection?
Well, that was a larger conversation with the Star and Tribune. They have their own archives and archivists and everything, but it's like the Historical Society ends up being a spot for a lot of stuff to go to because, you know, proper of storage and being able to take care of those types of things. So it was just a bunch of larger collections. And it just happened to have Indians in it. That's why I think it's great, is because like we do focus a lot on our Native collection, but the way that Native, I'm always interested in how Native people show up in other spots where you're not necessarily looking for them necessarily. But one of our colleagues found, hey, we got these images and there's some folders labeled Indians. Would you like to look at them? And we were like, yes. And so then we started developing, what can we do with these? Because they've been, you know, they're just sitting in these folders, and they have been for years. So I think that's a great thing, is just being able to be like, okay, now that we have the opportunity, we have these, what now? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the time, some of the stuff, you know, it's in the basement. It doesn't get seen. It doesn't get interacted with. So then how can we change that?
Right. That's a really good point. So is one of the processes a DVD, one of the processes a book, and then things like that. Is that the next step, or what?
We're going to work on the exhibit and hopefully figure out what we will definitely be doing programming around the exhibit. So I'm hoping that you might be interested in doing some programming, since we want to talk about the old radio shows that were around, and then thinking about how can this live past on, you know, past the exhibit date. So that's always something we're thinking about more and more, because more often than not, the stuff that's on exhibit goes on exhibit, and then when it's done, it's done. But we want to figure out how that can live on, and hopefully we can share that with community to, you know, maybe other community spaces want to have that show. That could be an opportunity there to work closely with community partners.
Yeah. And history, and having the correct history, and, you know, how, you know, we joke around about being Ho-Chunk, but, you know, people that are 40 years and younger don't really realize the impact Ho-Chunk had in here way before there was borders and, you know, things like that, that I know we've joked around about that, and we've talked about that too. And, you know, I'm excited because I know you, and like right here in my office here are over 50 tapes from the St. Paul Public Schools that have Native Americans in it over the last, 30 years. Those are things that, you know, the Minnesota Historical Society would, you know, want and have, and where to store it and where to get it and how to proceed is what you guys are experts at.
Yeah, exactly. And the way that we can provide
our expertise as a resource to communities is really something that we've been striving for. I've been working with some conservators and others. We did a preserving and digitizing your photographs little mini workshop up on the White Earth Reservation for many reasons. But it was just a great pilot to show, be like, hey, this does work. There is a need from community to know how to, you know, preserve their things. We geared it towards Native community, and we kind of, because they use language that I'm like, I don't know what this means, so we need to change it so that community understands. And we also created some little photo care packages with some, you know, acid-free boxes and stuff to put the photos in, just to, you know, and be like, here's what you need to take care of it. It's really not that much if you think about it, and just to make it more accessible. And it's exciting to think about all the opportunities that we can do, all the things we can do in the future.
Have you had an experience, you know, of somebody coming up there and getting emotional when they saw somebody they haven't seen in years or that they were related to? Do you have any kind of anecdote?
Yeah, I actually will share with Dr. Twyla Baker. She, Mandan Hidatsa from the Three Affiliated Tribes, she had come down with a group because the Historical Society actually holds a large collection about their tribe, the Gilbert Wilson Collection. And we went through this photo album that this amateur anthropologist put together, and she saw one of the only pictures she's seen of her grandfather in his regalia, and it really meant a lot to her. So she has been a champion on supporting our relationship, and so we actually were able to do a digital repatriation of that work to the Mandan Hidatsa tribe for their cultural resource center to have excellent copies of those things for community use. So those kinds of things, yeah, it has happened. It's amazing. Those are the best days at work, in my opinion.
Wow, what a great story. And we've had her on, and it's funny, you know, how you connect the dots, and we're a small community. She played basketball with Ruth Buffalo in college, and it's just like, wow, you know. And, yeah, that's an exciting story, but I can't imagine seeing somebody in regalia for the only time and feeling the connection and all those things that come with it. That is probably the best of the best, right?
It really is, and it's hard for me to do some of my work without even, you have to go, I have to look up my family's names just to see if they show up, like where they show up in these different texts and these different things. And it's very interesting, and it's like I've got to learn more about myself, my family, and share it with my, you know, my aunts and uncles, my mom, and it's just been really great to be able to do that too.
You know, as you were talking too, I was thinking of that show, Finding Your Roots on PBS, and I'm addicted to that show, and that's kind of what's going on with the Minnesota Historical Society, whether it's relatives or tribal members. That it's just like mind-blowing.
It really is, and it can be, and like the way, again, how people show up in our collections vary. So I've been learning more and more about it, and my main goal is to make it more accessible for community, because it hasn't been for a long time for a lot of reasons, but like, how can we change that?
Do you ever find any kind of thing, like, I know the skyscrapers in New York were put together by a lot of natives because they weren't afraid of heights. Have you found anything like similar to that in Minnesota that you didn't expect?
You're putting me on the spot. Like, I know a lot of unexpected history. But now I'm nervous.
No, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but just something that you've run into where like, oh my goodness, I didn't know, like, you know, there was a lot of natives on the Humboldt football team because they were called the Indians. And I know that was kind of true in the early 70s. My Dega, my uncle, was on, you know, just things like that, because there's pictures and there's collections. Mm-hmm. And
well, I found out a lot of natives played baseball back in the day, especially with the boarding schools. And I, like, considering, like, I don't see as many native people playing baseball anymore. So it's just really interesting to see how that came about. And like, especially with like Charles Bender, who is in the Hall of Fame, and I think he's from White Earth too. So
yeah, he is.
No big deal. But you know, yeah. Like, that's just interesting. That to me, I think, is really great. I always love learning new things. I think the thing that is always surprising to me is how closely connected a lot of stuff in Minnesota and the Twin Cities are to like family members. Cause I'll see my great aunt's name here, a cousin's name here, and these things from the 70s and 80s. And I'm like, well, I'm not like, I didn't realize how close I was to some of these things that were happening and that we now think of like great things that, you know, that they did these great things in the 70s, but it's not that distant.
Yeah, well, I think we still have a big culture of softball. I see these big, huge tournaments all over the place. And it's funny you talked about Charles Bender, but I know him as Chief Bender, and he is a Hall of Famer. And when I was at the Hall of Fame this last summer, I looked for his plaque and got a selfie with it because it's important. I can't imagine what he went through, you know, as a young person in the major leagues and on one of the greatest teams with Connie Mack. And yeah, and we've had, you know, Jim Thorpe, of course, who played Major League Baseball and was elected the greatest athlete in the first half century. He was Bo Jackson before Bo Jackson was around. And so it's great to amplify and celebrate all these things that come through your way.
Yeah, definitely. I always have fun. I always find rabbit holes to go into when I do research. And I was just doing research on the Upper Midwest American Indian Center for the exhibit, just because there are a lot of photos from that time period about that. So I'm like, that's where I was seeing names of I'm like, I know this person. I know this, like all of these things. And it's just really, I think what's surprising is just that closeness and like, it's really not that distant from yourself. And I really enjoy that.
Wow. Really good point and a good way to end this. Thank you so much, Rita, for stopping in. I really enjoy our conversations, whether you're on the road or here on the show. I really do. And I love history. So that's a good thing too. So just a quick thing. Where are you located again for everybody listening?
Our main site is the Minnesota History Center, which is in St. Paul, just off of 94 in Kellogg.
All right. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you soon. That was Rita Arndt of the Minnesota Historical Society. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Take care of your community by joining Metro Transit's Adopt a Stop program. Show your community pride by adopting a transit stop. Join us in helping keep the stop and your neighborhood beautiful and report any maintenance needs to us. We'll put a sign at the stop recognizing your efforts. Plus, you'll get 10 free rides every month. Get details at metrotransit.org/adopt. Again, adopt a stop for Metro Transit.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves. Please join Howling for Wolves on Wolf Day, Tuesday, February 7th, 2023 at the Minnesota State Capitol. You can sign up on Howling for Wolves event page. Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl! Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, this portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Oh! Oh. I tried a low howl. I went ho.
You went ho. I went high on that. But I do want to remind everybody that Wolf Day in Minnesota at the state capitol is next Tuesday, February 7th, and you can still register at bit.ly/wolfday2023 or go to howlingforwolves.org to find out how you can register and to remind people that you can go virtually. You do not have to go to the Capitol in person. You can go virtually. So there's really not a great reason to not sign up. You know, there's lots of good reasons to sign up and protect the Maingan for future generations.
You know, we haven't talked about this in a long time, Ogama, and I know Wendy had brought this story up over the years a couple times, but when they released the wolves in Yellowstone Park, you know, and the, and how they changed the whole ecology of the waters and the plants and all the things that they did, it's just an amazing relative that they are.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it was Yellowstone Park, like you were saying, they reintroduced wolves, and they had had a lot of trouble with population issues of other animals, relatives that live there, deer and moose and bear and other things that were there. I don't know if there's moose in Yellowstone, but you get what I'm talking about. And having the wolf population back in the park really helped to kind of level out and really bring back to kind of like a homeostasis many things within the park. And we forget that all of our animal relatives are connected and connected to us in many ways, and that we need those relatives to make things operate the way that they're supposed to.
Yeah, I like how you put that, operate like they're supposed to. You know, it's like George said. George, give us a call. George said balance. I work with George in Ho-Chunk Nation, and he's running for president. I mean, he should probably give us a quick call and pitch us what's going on there with him. So, yeah, give us a call, 952-946-6205. That's 952-946-6205. Give us a call. Tell us what you like and don't like about me, or, you know, well, we won't get you on the air, but, you know, you can call. Oh,
you know, while we're waiting for callers and maybe hopefully George calling us in, Robert, I just wanted to talk a little bit, too, about Rita and the, you know, Minnesota Historical Society. That she did talk a little bit about the undergraduate museum fellowship that's coming up here. And I just wanted to let everybody know that that is a 10-week paid program with 3 weeks of seminar and workshops and 7 weeks of an internship program that's designed to help undergraduate people experience museums and cultural resources and public history, as well as tribal historic preservation. And you do not have to be an enrolled member in a federally recognized tribe, but they do ask that applicants be affiliated with an indigenous community and, you know, kind of have some sort of record of that as well. And then they also have an artist in residence program for those who are practicing cultural forms of art or traditional art, or what's also known as material culture. I don't believe they have the dates for that one for this year open yet, but the application would be available on the Minnesota Historical Society website when that is available, and it allows for people to you know, get support while they're doing those forms of art and you know, making sure that our culture stays alive. So that those two things are really, really awesome things that I had not even known until we had Rita join our program that the Minnesota Historical Society offers. So that's really good to hear about.
Yeah. And it's fun. too, how things change, and you got to have representation. So we have somebody from White Earth that's working in the museum and speaking their truth and things like that. So I think it's important that we have someone like Rita working there. And I know they have more than just more natives than just her, but it wasn't that way years ago, and they didn't ask our opinions, and they didn't ask how we felt about things. So really cool to partner with the Minnesota Historical Society and have Rita on as much as we can, I think is really important. Again, because I love history, and I love the correct history, though.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I made the comment kind of in our private chat here, but you know, I believe it hasn't been renewed, but Rutherford Falls kind of talked about this. The television, TV, dramatic comedy, you know, talked about and revolved around the functions and creations of a museum. You know, this Native woman wanted to create a tribal museum for their people, and her best friend ran, obviously, a non-Native museum. You know, that museum had some harmful notions of history surrounding it, and I think that that's something that comes to mind for a lot of people for museums. But to have those two things kind of, you know, join forces and to have that support available through the wider network of, you know, history in the state is something that's really special and wonderful that Minnesota is able to do.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. I think a lot. You know, it's funny, too. Rutherford Falls was canceled after two seasons, but it really gave us, and we had a privilege to have a lot of the cast on, and some of them went on to Reservation Dogs and worked with them and write for Reservation Dogs. And it was the Lieutenant Governor, if you remember the first season, it was really heavy with that NPR white NPR guy. Jana was kind of, remember her character's name, was having a relationship with him. And our Lieutenant Governor is married to a former NPR NPR person,
right,
on air. And
yes.
She was always saying, why did they stole my story? And jokingly, you know, and it's pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. You know, and I think that, you know, it really is something that makes people feel, Native people especially, feel really connected to something when they go, hey, that's my story too. You know, that is the beauty of having Native storytellers in the wider sphere of the media, in movies and television and online and anywhere, is that you can go, oh, I have a story like that too. And not every story has to be traumatic to hear about. You know, we get to share joyful stories and silly stories and important stories and, you know, stories that relate to history, like Rita was talking about. And all of those things are equally important.
Yeah. And to let everyone know, too, Reservation Dogs is coming up on their third season. If you haven't seen it, and George just texted me, he hasn't seen it. So, George, get a Hulu, get a 30-day Hulu account and binge on it. Their free 30-day account just to try it out and binge on it, and maybe even watch Prey. They're on the movie with the prequel of that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Do you remember what that was based on? I'm having a brain fart here. Can you say fart on the radio?
I'm sorry. Say it. What? I don't know if I was tracking you for that one, Robert.
Yeah, Prey was based on. Let me look it up here. Prey. let me do that real quick here before the end of the movie here. It's the Predator franchise.
Oh, Predator brand. Yes, that's right. Okay. I'm not a big horror genre, everybody. So thank you, Cheryl, for putting that in the comments just in time. We appreciate it.
And yeah, thanks, Cheryl.
Tuned in to listen to us as well.
Well, good to see you, Cheryl. And I love your granddaughter. She's Ho-Chunk. Hey, we'll see you tomorrow. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. Free Leonard Peltier now.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.